You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
You'll learn whether or not should you be faced with a saltwater crocodile if you can outrun it or not.
What can they teach us?
So the crocodile's stomach is the most acidic of all vertebrates because they digest everything.
Many species are in crisis and need your help. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. This is Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Angie, today we're going to cover, I think, a favorite of quite a few people.
Definitely. It's been requested, and I'll tell you what, I feel a lot more comfortable being in the reptile realm than last week when we were covering invertebrates.
Yes. Jellyfish is a whole different ballgame, huh?
Yes, which does go to show how much I've grown, though, since doing this podcast, because many months ago, I would have thought a reptile was out of my comfort zone, which it still is.
I know.
Physiology is definitely much more unique than a mammal. Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll touch on that today. But yes, no, I'm very happy to be back in crocodile land.
Yes, yes. So today we are doing the saltwater crocodile, and this was requested all the way from the UK. So across the pond from you and Damien. So shout out to Damien. He asked us back in December, and we you know, plan these out weeks and weeks in advance. So Damien, here you go. And this is a great suggestion. And we just did have another suggestion from a fan up in Canada, which we're going to try to get to soon. So if he's listening, we'll definitely try to put that one on the old agenda.
Yes. Well, thank you. And thank you, Damien, and everyone else for your requests. It's definitely fun to know that we have two listeners besides our parents, Chris.
So that's what we've got. Hey, I know for a fact, Jesse Golden, who I'm in touch with down in New Zealand. I know for a fact he listens, cause okay. We do have hits. We have quite a few fans down there. And then in Australia, Lee, shout out to Lee, who's always active on our Facebook. I told Lee we were actually going to do one of the favorites from Australia. So here we go. The saltwater crocodile, a reptile. So we're revisiting reptiles again, and just amazing, amazing. I've seen them in the wild, Angie. I've seen crocs in the wild. Yes, yes.
Okay.
When I went down under, you know, many, many years ago, when my brother was down there, early 2000s, and I was up in northern Queensland, and it was just south of Cairns, and went on a riverboat tour, and we saw some salties. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Oh, wow. I never knew that, Chris. See, I'm learning about you too. That's awesome.
Yeah. People got to go to Australia. Like, that has got to be on the bucket list. I need to go back to Australia. It's a beautiful country. The people are amazing. I love them. I love Australia. I love my Kiwis too, but Australia is awesome.
Well, yeah, I've never been to Australia, but when I was a lot younger and traveling through South America, I met a fellow traveler from Australia, and his name was Matt. And I don't know his last name, his, you know, AOL, AOL account at the time to show how long ago this was. It was like something like Mad on the Move. And anyways, he was a tour guide in Australia. And so as we backpacked around South America, he told me a lot about, I basically felt like I had been to Australia because he had just given me almost like a storytelling tour.
Yes.
He had just made it sound so beautiful and majestic and raw, right? Like,
yeah.
Kind of like the motherland, like Africa, right? Like
it's huge. It's a huge continent. Right. It's enormous. Australia's enormous. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like,
different climates and of course, crazy species, right? Which is what we're touching on today and hopefully more in the future. We've done the platypus before. Hopefully soon we'll do the kangaroo. Oh my gosh, I want to do the koala, the wallaby. I could go on.
Yeah, we did Tassie Devil. I mean,
it's
a beautiful place. We need to go and like do a live podcast from there at some point in our career.
So somebody invite us and host us.
It's not cheap to fly from the States. But,
so not cheap.
But it's so worth it. It is so worth it.
Well, yes. And if you guys stick with us today, learning about the saltwater crocodile from down under, hopefully you'll learn whether or not should you be faced with a saltwater crocodile, if you can outrun it or not. At the end of the show, we'll talk to you about the speeds which they can run and compare them to humans. And then you'll be able to decide, we'll probably squash some folklore that you've heard in the past.
Right. And I have some statistics on attacks and where and stuff like that. How much are fatal and blah, 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 blah. So we'll save that for the end because they're a beautiful animal. They are, wow. I mean, the saltwater crocodile is found in Australia and Southeast Asia. And then, but crocodiles in general, we'll cover some general crocodile stuff. We'll touch upon a little bit on the Nile crocodile, which is from Africa, but we have crocodiles near you, Angie, just a couple hundred miles south of you. There's crocs.
And isn't that fascinating, Chris? I think I just learned that fact when I moved to Florida, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. Of course, being from the U.S. and the States, everybody's familiar with the alligators. And I go, I study at the University of Florida. We are the Gators. But learning that there was crocodiles in our neck of the woods was surprising to me.
Yeah. So we'll cover a little bit about that. And, these aren't quite as ancient as the jellyfish, which we covered last week. But these
It was fun. Well, and how about those comics by Underdone Comics?
Yes, Rob. We have to give a shout out to Rob Lang. That was amazing. Incredible artist. And I'm so glad that we're able to collaborate with him. And we're going to plan future species. So make sure you check out the comics he did for us with the immortal jellyfish. It's beautiful. I mean, beautiful.
Well, and check out his page on Facebook as well to follow him. And you'll definitely have a infusion of some solid animal humor, which we could all use a little bit more of for sure.
Yes. Yeah, he is. And so like Angie was saying, these are almost like dinosaurs. They lived through the last mass extinction, the fifth one, when the asteroid hit the Earth. It's, to describe a crocodile, I think a lot of people kind of understand.
Definitely. But Chris, it's got to be pointed out that the saltwater crocodile is the largest reptilian species alive today. The largest.
It's huge. They get up to 23 feet. 23 feet. Oh, my goodness. Or seven meters. I mean, and they weigh over a ton, 2,600 pounds. Or the males, right? This is the largest one ever found. 23 feet. Like, that's huge. That's bigger than most great white sharks. Like, enormous predator. And I think it's funny because these alligators and crocodiles, people think that's what dinosaurs looked like, right? And then Xander's got to love them there at the zoos, just looking like dinosaurs.
Oh, yes. And we're so lucky just being from where we're at in Florida. And then, of course, with the zoo that John works at, that we get to see them and be close to them in a very safe way. And they do look like dinosaurs. I mean, I think that's how dinosaurs looked, right?
Yeah, and it's like, but now they think dinosaurs had feathers and different species,
Sure.
So we don't necessarily know, but I guarantee you most of them kind of looked like this. Like The thing is about the crocodiles is, and I'm going to get to it in evolution, they came from allosaurs, which, you know, we'll cover in a minute. But, you know, just to describe them, obviously, people kind of understand what crocodiles or alligators look like. The, you know, long, streamlined bodies, scaly skin, but it's more like leathery. You know, they make boots out of alligator skin, which, you know, you shouldn't. I don't know, support, but
yeah, don't do it. Don't yeah. do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
But well, they have a large head. Mm-hmm. And of course they're known for the ridges that run from their eyes to their snout. So when they are in the water, they don't barely just their eyes and their nostrils. So they look like a log when they float, if anything, as a way to, which acts as a way to camouflage them. And then what I found really beautiful about the saltwater croc in particular, because all the different crocodiles have different patterns and a little bit similar in the brown, gray, yellowish color.
But green drab. Just, yeah.
Green drab. Hey.
Yeah, that's a good description. Yeah, that's a description I read.
Green drab. Yeah. I love it. That's, yeah, yeah, I want those kind of curtains, right? That color of curtains.
Yeah. That was like my army uniform was green drab or olive green drab. So that's what they look like.
Yeah, yeah. But they have, you know, they on their ventral surface, it can be white or yellow in color. And they almost have like stripes, if you will, for lack of better terms, on the lower side of their body, but it doesn't extend the belly. And my favorite part about the salties is their tail that is almost a checkered board pattern of like gray and then yellow. Mm-hmm, I don't know if the checkerboard's the right way to describe it, but I think that makes it stand out from some of the other, that really distinct pattern on the tail compared to some of the other crocodiles, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. And they, some of the things they have, like, you know, just some terminology, osteoderms, the bony scales or plates that kind of line their backs and kind of give them that dinosaur scaly appearance, right? So that's what those are called. Just, yeah, I mean, amazing, scary looking creatures, but they're awesome.
Prehistoric.
I
mean, they're just beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, oh, it's, you know, when you look at biodiversity, just how do you not love it? How do you not love it? We just covered jellyfish and now we're, you know, and it's just, and now we're covering crocodiles. I just, oh, when you look at the diversity on Earth, it's just amazing. So I think one of the questions I had, Angie, and we're doing this because Damien requested crocs. I think if we would have chosen, we probably would have done gators because we were both, you know, Florida Gators down there.
Chomp, chomp, Chris.
Yeah, I know. I loved them. I love the gators and seeing them in the wild, you know, see them on campus. That's the thing. People, I don't know, understand on the UF campus, there's gators in the water. Mm-hmm. I was told moving to Florida, if there's water, just think there's a gator in it and don't go swimming. But then I see these Florida natives like water skiing and everything.
I know, Chris. I'm from Michigan. And so I grew up, of course, on Lake Michigan, which there's nothing in there that can harm you, right? And then, of course, I had inland lakes and rivers. And the only thing you had to worry about in rivers were leeches, had those, whatever.
Yes, I remember that story.
Inland lakes, no, nothing, no problems. And then, yes, I moved to Florida and they're like, don't walk your small dog near water. Don't go, you know. Always be safe near the water. And I, of course, being an adult and now having little ones, I take it, my dog's pretty big. She can hold her own, but I take it very seriously. And yes, we go to some friends of a friend's house and they live on an inland lake here in Florida. And these are 5 and 7 year old are just swimming in the water, like in an inland lake, like nobody's business. And they're like, oh, there's not alligators in here. And yeah, I mean, and there had never been one sighted, you know, there had never been a sighting of one. I'm sure the parents know, yeah, of course. But I just, it is a little, to me, but I think I'm a paranoid parent when it comes to like water and my kids and things like that in general.
Yeah,
from growing up on Lake Michigan. And I have a very healthy, John always teases me, but I have a very like healthy fear. I was a great swimmer in high school and on the swim team, but yeah, I have a healthy fear of water. And then you put some of these creatures in it. Forget about it.
So alligators, when we get the statistics, they're not as dangerous as people think they are. And because a lot of people in Florida live in Louisiana, in South Carolina, in Georgia, in Texas, people live alongside gators and the attacks are ultra rare. But some of the differences between alligators and crocs, I think the one thing is crocs are more aggressive. So they're a little bit more dangerous to people.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is definitely repeated over and over and different people that have had, that I've worked with both and crocodile and alligator experts as far as some behavioral differences, as far as aggression. But I think I'm more of a visual person. So from a visual point of view, I think if you lined up an alligator and a crocodile, I think you could probably start to suss out a little bit of the differences and start to have more of a trained eye, because you want to look for the fact that alligators have like a wider U-shaped snout, mm-hmm. where crocodiles' front ends are a little bit more V-shaped, mm-hmm. in, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then crocodiles are known for what they call a toothy grin. Yeah. When their snouts are shut, crocodiles look like they're flashing the fourth tooth on each mm-hmm. side of the lower jaw. So maybe it looks more like the crocodile needs to go to the dentist, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then other than that size, a crocodile is going to be several feet longer than an alligator. And with color, a crocodile is typically lighter. It's less of that drab green. Mm-hmm, so I think mm-hmm. the drab green, the army green that Chris was talking about before, is more of an alligator color.
Right.
And... Right. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing is location, right, Chris?
Yeah,
where they're from.
Right. So your alligators are mostly in the Americas or North America and China. You know, mm-hmm. they find them in China. Mm-hmm. And then the crocodiles are Asia, Africa, North America, right there in Florida, Central America, the Caribbean. They're also in mm-hmm. Indonesia and North Australia. So crocodiles are more widespread around the planet versus alligators. But, you know, they're amazing creatures. Yeah.
In regards to habitat, a crocodile will prefer water that's a little more salty than an alligator.
Right. Yeah.
So a little more fresh water.
Yeah. And that's the name of the show, Saltwater Crocodile. So they can swim in the ocean, and they have found them in the ocean.
Long distances.
Yes.
Yes.
Kid, Australia, we love you. I've got to go back. But geez, you got some.
Their animals are just like tough, like bad mofos, you know, just like.
Oh, and the Aussies are tough. Like Aussies are tough.
Just, and that's what I'm saying. Like their animals match their, you know, they're just amazing and just amazing and tough. And I have a lot of respect for them.
Yes. And so the saltwater crocs, a pretty huge range actually. So North Australia, all in Indonesia. So Papua New Guinea, Malaysia, mm-hmm. the Philippines, you know, India, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. So all along the coast. So talking about swimming in the ocean, you know, they can. But the saltwater crocs, you know, that's kind of a iconic animal. One of the iconic species, I think, for Australia. And that's why we kind of talk about that. Now, crocodiles in general, like we were saying, all over the world with the 24 different species, again, they're going to be in tropical ranges. Now, the other crocodile that's pretty famous, and I don't know if Peter Pan was a Nile crocodile or not. I don't know why I keep thinking of that today. But the Nile crocodile is pretty much, mm-hmm. you know, not only in Egypt, you know, obviously Nile River where they got their name, but, you know, Central West, Central East, and South Central Africa, they are everywhere.
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I have seen some Niles crocodiles
there
in
you
the
go.
Wild when I was in. Yeah, there you go. I was more caring about the hippos.
Yeah.
But yes, nope. From a distance, from a very safe distance, definitely saw some crocs.
Yeah. So there you go.
And I think, this would have been in Zambia.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I know. Yeah, I remember in the hippo episode, you were talking about that. And that's one place I want to go so bad. Oh, but you didn't see any of the big.
No.
Yeah. I remember you were complaining. You didn't see any of some of the big ones, right? You just saw a bunch of antelope.
No, Chris, I would never complain about my wildlife adventures. No, we've done pretty good. I have not seen a leopard, mm-hmm. Or a rhino.
Okay. That's what it was. It was a rhino.
That stings. Yeah. That burns a little bit. My girlfriend was so sweet when I first went, to visit her in Zambia, mm-hmm. and we saw like most of everything, but she knew I really wanted to see a rhino. And so she took me to like this drive through kind of backyard wildlife park so we could see in Africa. Yes. Poor animals. No, the animals are in fine condition or whatever, but she was sweet. She wanted to make up for it. So so technically I guess I have seen a white rhino, but I think it was not, I mean, it was, it was not that was, what I would consider to be in a in the wild.
And that was Allison, right? Our friend.
No, this is my bestie. Yeah, Allison's she's up there, but no, I want my best friend from high school, Nani.
Oh, that's right.
Peace Corps in Zambia. And so in my early 20s, I went and stayed with her for a while there. And that was my first time going to Africa. Allison was the second time.
Okay.
So well, I don't know what'll bring me there for a third time. I'm trying. There's a conference in Kruger National Park.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm trying to put together some data to see if I can finagle swing my way there.
Yeah, Dr. Mortensen's not there to pay for your trips anymore. So
I know. That's what I'm saying. I had to find a sponsor.
Sorry. So, I bring up Allison because if you haven't heard that interview, please go back and listen to Allison Kennedy Benson's talk on rhino relocation. Like just wow. Wow. I think about that interview with her and it was just an amazing one with what she did with rhino relocation there in Africa.
Oh, yeah. And take it from me firsthand, John and I got to go visit and stay with her while she was relocating rhinos, which she's so good at doing it. That's why we couldn't see them in the wild. They were so acclimated that they were hiding from us.
That's good. That's good. They needed to. Now, crocodiles, you know, it's trying to convince people to care about reptiles. I mean, we go back to one of our first episodes, the poison dart frogs. You know, why care about reptiles? I mean, obviously, you know, they're very critical to biodiversity and the ecology of the environment. I just, you know, looking at this, of the 24 species, 7 are critically endangered. Like a third, almost a third are endangered, like heading towards extinction. That is scary. You know, that is not okay. Yeah. That is not okay. You know, and we're going to, when we get to conservation, we'll give you some numbers on them, but that is sad. You know, that there's again, another subset of species.
We're talking about a species that is so amazing. I keep wanting to say like a curse word today. I don't know why. I have like a sailor's mouth. I keep wanting to say like bad bleep.
Yeah, no.
Bad
bleep. No.
And I won't, but they're just so tough but beautiful and amazing, like punk rock. Maybe I'll just say punk rock, right? They're just cool punk rock animals. They have been here around since the dinosaurs. No problem. Mm-hmm, and recently, how many, you said there's 23 or 24 species of crocodiles?
Well, yeah, according to IUCN. So, and that includes, I mean, they're crocodilians, you know, types, and they even include alligators in that assessment.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But, you know, there's a fair number of them that are critically endangered. And that to me is just really unacceptable. And I mean, they made it through some serious climate changes, no problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris, crocodiles and alligators have lived through ice ages, times in history that maybe, meteorites.
Yeah. I mean,
stuff, right? Like crazy geological changes. And yet, here we are today when we have all this technology and all this intelligence and all this, and they're having issues. And so I feel like for all the kids out there that love dinosaurs, like my son, that is still trying, he's 5 and he gets extinction, but like he doesn't get it, of course. And so he's just such a huge dinosaur fan. Of course, he wants to be a paleontologist, but I just don't want to have to tell him that all of these animals that could have been saved in our lifetime and we didn't do it. They went extinct on our watch for what I would consider to be non-natural reasons. Sorry.
Non-natural extinction. No, it is. I mean, it's critical. I think, you know, and it's funny, like we keep going back to last week's episode, but you know, we talk about jellyfish and jellyfish are booming in the oceans because of sea turtles populations declining, fish populations declining.
Right. They're so natural checks and balances.
Right. So it's an ecological imbalance and you're taking out these top predators in critical ecosystems around the world. And again, like it's a message you and I have been saying for a year and a half now. It's, you start knocking all these species out, you taking these legs out, or you start cutting off all the branches of the tree's going to die. You know, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just another example of another species. Now, the saltwater croc, thankfully, is doing well. And there was massive hunting going on in Australia. That is no longer the case. So they are actually rebounding right. quite nicely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I don't want to speak too much out of turn without, I didn't take the proper time to dive completely into the literature with the different regulations that were put into place. But from my understanding is basically Australia manned up and said, hey, we've got to protect this creature before it's gone. Cause I think they were down to something very small, like a couple thousand, if I read correctly. And of course, in their areas, in their different territories, and they just put an end to, they just banned it. They said, this is no longer acceptable. Hunting's done. You'll be fine. You'll be in trouble. And their numbers are now booming. And yeah. It's very similar. It echoes to the efforts that were put forth here in the U.S. for the American alligator as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And they're doing fine. So, and they're doing about. Doing
oh, better, yeah. And that's the thing is like, there's so, you know, if anything, I think the salty is, you know, that's their nickname, their loving nickname. Yeah. The salty is, at least in Australia, is a beautiful, fine, happy ending story of what can happen when you put the right regulations in place. Mm. And of course, there's checks and balances. There's still poachers out there and they're trying to figure out how to balance basically alligator farming for certain commercial goods and if that's sustainable or not with different populations. And so it's not perfect. And I don't think Chris or I are ever trying to promote that there is a perfect solution to any of these crises, any animal crises out there or conservation issues. But man, at least taking steps forward are huge. And Australia did that and their numbers are much better than they were because of that. And I think it's just a shining example of animal conservation.
Yeah. Working.
So thank you, Australia.
Yeah. Good day, Mike. So the scientific name for saltwater crocs is Crocodilus porosus. And then here you go. Alligator. Do you know the scientific name for the alligator? That's something you should know as a gator, you know, gator grad.
I should. It should be like on our entrance exam.
Yeah, I know.
Or exit it exam should, or something.
Yeah. I can't believe that. I wish I could go back and be your PhD advisor. So what is the scientific name for the alligator? It's Alligator mississippiensis.
Like I didn't
Mississippi.
Know that.
Yeah, mississippiensis.
That's
like really.
So interesting. Okay.
I guess somebody from Mississippi got the name.
Somebody was kind of bored. Yeah, they're just like, Mississippi, M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
It's a big, yeah, it's a big one. Yeah. And then the Nile crocodile is Crocodilus niloticus. So, and a bunch of words.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast. And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet. Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mischief Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
Just to jump into evolution, you know, like I alluded earlier, the allosaurs, and I a little bit dove into this, but I'm not going to go into everything because I just thought it was so cool. Dates back about 200 million years. So they,
yeah, I read
again,
200 to 240.
Yeah. Yeah. Long time.
So long.
And they link it to allosaurs because of the holes in their skulls behind the eye socket. So, these early, they call them diaspids. They had two holes. And so I guess alligators and crocodiles have that too. So, you know, again, looking at the bones and finding ancient crocodiles. So roughly at the end of the Triassic period, so over 200 million years ago, the allosaurs split off. And then that's when crocodiles came about. And then the archaeosaurs actually went and formed dinosaurs. So they evolved right in step with dinosaurs. So they're that ancient.
And I think the other thing to put into perspective about dinosaurs, because we're all used to just seeing them on TV shows or the movies or as toys or whatever, is and crocodiles and alligators with their prehistoric look like dinosaurs, as Chris just mentioned, related to dinosaurs, part of the branch, part of the split off. They're actually biologically, from a physiologically point of view, very complex, unlike the jellyfish that we covered last week. They have a four-chambered heart, a diaphragm, cerebral cortex. I mean, they're more in line with mammals than a lot other reptiles, if you will. So, you know, but they've been around forever, and they're relatively, in the last 100 million years or so, relatively unchanged. Am I correct? Right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting.
Like, they're doing it well. Like, their physiology has worked for them. Their behavior, which we're going to talk about here coming up, their nutrition, their diet, their reproduction, it has worked. It's a tried and true and proven time and time again. It's worked for hundreds of millions of years. And so that just blows my mind. I just find that super incredible.
Right, right. And it's just when you think about it and you start wrapping your mind around it, not only did dinosaurs were very successful, lived for hundreds of millions of years, you know, on Earth, these things have lived just as long, right? So they've been just as successful. The first crocodile is about 200 million years ago is when they have some different candidates that they think was the first one. And it was interesting looking at some of the history or the natural history of them. They used to be on land. So these allosaurs used to be kind of land dwelling crocodile type, you know, some of them were bipedal, but mostly on four legs.
I was gonna say, they're two legs or four legs. Okay.
Yeah. Bipedal, mostly four, but there was some bipedal ones. And it was the rise of the dinosaurs that drove them into the water. And so they had to evolve to survive there. Now, the last mass extinction 60 million years ago, when it killed off the dinosaurs, it killed off the super crocs, which I'm going to talk about next. And the scientists think, you know, the smaller crocs that we see today survived probably because they didn't need as much food or resources to survive, you know, when most of the planet was wiped out. You know, some of the smaller ones, slow metabolism when we get there is really interesting, and didn't need as much food to survive. Now, the largest croc, this is cool because this goes back to Titanoboa and going back to, what was the snake we covered? The big one, the Burmese python. Isn't that the one? We did the Burmese python. And I talked about Titanoboa and, you know, how UF discovered that. So that when they had the Titanoboa exhibit, they had the largest turtle, which we covered, and then the largest croc. And the scientist who was down there, this is what he was looking for, bones for these super crocs in Colombia.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
And he sent the bones to the lab there in Florida, and the grad student goes, oh no, that's a snake bone. And then he discovered Titanoboa. So the largest croc was Sarasuchus, dubbed the super croc. Guess how many feet long it was?
I don't know, like 40?
Yeah, bing, ding, 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 Dr. Angie Atkin. Yeah, you got it. You got it. So 40 feet long and weighed about 10 tons. So
I wouldn't have guessed that weight. That weight I would not have guessed.
Like if you...
I'm looking like across my my bedroom into my living room, and I'm trying
40
to imagine
feet.
40 feet.
Mm. Crocodile. I mean, Titanoboa, I think, was like 60 feet, but... Whoa, like these super predators. Oh my goodness. Like it's funny. You know, like these movies that do time machines and stuff. Could you imagine that? I wouldn't want to be a human living around that. And like, oh my God, anything could eat you in one bite. Oh my goodness. So yeah, they were huge. They were huge in South America. And then all the super crocs died out when the meteor came and boom, blew everything up.
Right.
So a cool thing about crocodiles is they live forever. They live super long. So on average, 70 years, some over 100. And the oldest croc today, and I'm going to put this video online because I found it. His name is Cassius, and he's in Australia. He's 112. and he's almost he's almost 3,000 pounds, weighs 18. He's only 18 feet, so they obviously feed him really well because he's pretty heavy. And it's in Green Island off Cairns in North Queensland. So I have a video of them feeding this old guy. But 112.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was born in 1900-something. Crocs have, talking about size, major sexual dimorphism, right? Like, huge difference in size. Say yes.
Wow, yeah.
Looking at me like, what are you saying? I didn't study that. So, okay. So, Angie, yes.
I must have sped-read that part, right?
So, the males can be up to, 23 feet's huge. I mean, 18 to 20 feet is usually what they get. But that's still huge. And they weigh 2,000 pounds, 1,200 kilograms, over 2,000 pounds.
The males are the big ones, for sure.
They're huge. Females are half that size, 10 feet or 3 meters.
Wow.
And they only weigh, listen to this, 230 pounds on average. Or 100 kilograms.
Wow. Okay.
The males are 10
That's
times the weight.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get to Repro because, oh my God, man, how did they mate? Holy smokes.
I focused a little bit more on the moms and the babies this time. But you put a very good visual on it. I guess I hadn't really put them side by side. And that is crazy different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I didn't realize they were that big in size difference. Like, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, like, twice the length. That's huge. Yeah, I don't know if we've – that's bigger than what we've covered before, I feel like.
Anything. Twice – twice the length and 10 times the weight. Like, holy smokes. Those boys are big. They grow them big in Australia. They're big down there.
Go big or go home, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Chris, for me, kind of the rabbit hole I went down a little bit this week was – basically the physiology of the fact that they're often found in brackish waters and then of course open ocean, but that they can be found in fresh and or salt water. And so for me, that physiology, I wanted to try to understand it a little bit. And it's just, as far as the salties go, the reason they're able to do this, to move from brackish waters into salt waters, is because they have this salt excreting gland that's located under their tongue.
Yeah.
And there's also a valve in the back of its throat that allows it to open its mouth while breathing through its nose without ingesting that rush of salt water in their mouth.
You're right. And it's called the palatal flap. And they also, have a special path from the nostrils to the back of their throat. So I guess that helps breathing. When you were talking about that, that's one thing I looked at too, their physiology was the salt water. And going back to turtles, sea turtles, and they cry. So it made me think like, oh, they don't excrete salt like the sea turtles do and through these tear ducts. So then I thought, you've heard the term crocodile tears?
Yeah.
You've heard that term, right? Okay. So crocodile tears. Here's a factoid, right? So you always like to say for your dinner parties or whatever. So why they think crocodiles cried, And crocodile tears is basically mean when somebody's, trying to fake cry or, oh, I'm so sad. We've all dealt with people like that in our life who shall remain unnamed. So crocodiles actually cry. And when they do, it's when they're hunting. So I think that's where this originated is like they'll kill something and then it looks like they're crying like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm killing you. Why I eat you?
Oh, and, interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with them being sorry. It's because they said when at a feeding site, they hiss and they huff and they do all this stuff that flushes their tear ducts. And so they do cry tears a little bit, but it has nothing to do with feeling bad about eating something. Like they're just happy as clams when they go and
That's funny. Does it have anything to do with helping them excrete salt or no?
No, not at all.
They
it's
don't
that,
really have that issue.
It's the tongue. Yeah, it's the tongue. So crocodile tears. There you go. They actually do tear up when they eat, but it has nothing to do with feeling bad. Now, their nostrils do close when they submerge. And on average, I was kind of curious. They dive for up to 6 minutes, can stay down for up to 15 minutes. Now, they do start to drown if they're held under for close to 30 minutes. right? So I read that, like, especially when people are like chasing them or trying to keep them under, they can drown. Now, this one was, this factoid I thought was quite interesting because it just gets into reptile physiology. They actually did measure an alligator that stayed submerged for 8 hours, but it was in extremely cold water. So that was the only way. And you've heard stories of people like that drown in freezing cold water and they revive them and stuff because it really slows down the body metabolism.
Yeah.
Like super slow. And they do that when they dive. So it's always interesting looking at these different species like whales and things that can dive deep, sea turtles, things we talked about, you know, that these animals are able to slow their metabolism. And get this, Angie, when a crocodile dives, it heart beats only 2 to 3 times per minute. Per minute.
Wow, that's how crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're barely alive.
Yeah, they just they go under and they just chill out, and their blood just shunted to some critical tissues. And again, similar to whales and these other diving animals, their blood has a greater ability to carry oxygen, say, compared to us. Right. So, so just some different physiology that they have.
Well, and speaking of other like fun legends, that there's this Australian legend that crocodiles can sleep with one eye open. But just recently, scientists have proven that to be true. So researchers out of Australia reported that salties join a couple other aquatic animals and birds and the ability to do what is called unihemispheric sleep. I'm probably saying that wrong. But basically, it involves shutting down one half of their brain at a time while keeping the other half alert to danger. And their central nervous system is wired such that the right eye can remain open when the left side of the brain is awake. Does that make sense? I see you trying it. Your face is priceless the other side. Right now.
It's like when I close my right eye, my left brain would be asleep. Okay. Yeah, because it's opposite. So, it's wired,
It is opposite. But if you think about it, and I, of course, am no neurologist, and so the heavy science stuff is a little beyond my scope. And I think researchers are just at the cusp of even starting to try to understand how it works, right? But it is, it's a survival mechanism, right? I mean, if you can be half awake and ready for any attack, then you're more likely to survive for 200 million years, right?
Yeah.
And, but the researchers reported disconcertingly that some of these experiments showed that the crocodiles were particularly likely to keep an eye out when humans were nearby versus when crocodiles. But I think that points out not necessarily like an attack, but I think it goes to show that crocodiles have a healthy fear of humans as well, right? Like they're not, and we'll talk about it more later in the podcast. They're not trying to go after people. It's more people coming into their territories when, you know, when incidents
they get
happen.
Attacked. Yeah.
So, So crocodile tears. And now we have sleeping with one eye open.
I'm open. Crocodiles sleep. They do. And, you know, talking about humans, so the nutrition of them, I mean, they're an ambush predator. And I think that's where people get in trouble. You know, they don't, you know, they go to the water's edge. They're looking, you know, these animals are just looking for movement, things that their senses can detect, vibrations in the water. They go up and they grab and they eat, you know, and they eat anything. They're carnivores. Their diet's huge.
Yeah.
Huge range.
Chris, I was cracking up one place and I had to Google it, but like one place described him as a hyper carnivorous apex predator.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. I mean,
no, I know, but I was like, that's a lot of adjectives just to describe a carnivore.
They are. I mean, they are not selective eaters. They eat almost anything that they can get their hands on. You know, they, wallabies, cattle, water buffalo, crabs, turtles, other reptiles,
sharks,
flying foxes, sharks. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, you know, humans really aren't something that they're out looking for.
They're not hunting humans. No,
No. But, you know, again, it's they come up and they're like, oh, food. And they just go up and eat. And then, you know, the next thing, somebody got crunched. But the good news is with these apex predators is they don't need very much food. They can go a year without eating. 1 year. Could you go 1 year without eating? I can't
go barely 1 hour without eating.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think we talk about this like giraffes or something, with giraffe evolution.
Well, maybe that's part of their longevity. Yeah. You know, all these new nutritional studies are talking about like intermittent fasting and it helps slow cells aging process. So maybe that's part of, what'd you say the croc's name was that's 112 years old?
Oh, Cassius. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Cassius, that's some of Cassius' secrets. He eats like once a year. And so everything's just slowed down, right?
Yeah. No. Oh, God, I'm going to die young then if I have to fast all the time. I fast all the time. Yeah. But I mean, on average, the saltwater croc eats about 50 times a year. So, you know.
Okay.
Not a ton. They're not eating once a day. They intermittently. This was cool. You would like this. So I know you like to talk a lot about poop, and it would be interesting to look at a crocodile's poop. But
I love poop. I have a new class this semester, and I'm like, just so you guys know, like, there's a few things I talk a lot about, and it's definitely poop. So I warned my class in the beginning. You'll be hearing a lot of reproductive terminologies. I love poop. You'll learn too much information about my C-section and my vaginal birth. You'll know me way too well.
Your class is going to be full.
And you can cut that out if you want. But yes, I guess if people listen to this podcast, they should know as well, right? It's nature. But yes. Anyways, sorry. Yeah. Let's learn.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of poop, so the crocodile's stomach is the most acidic of all vertebrates because they digest everything. Bone, right? The horns, bones, the hooves, horns.
Shells,
everything.
Wow.
So nothing gets left behind. So I'd be curious to see, like we always talk about, the reason Angie likes poop so much is not the smell or stuff like that. It is because you learn so much about the animal. Looking at the feces tells you a lot about their health, their diet, what they ate, you know, almost when they ate and how well their system's working.
What they're excreting, what, you know, different hormones, different toxins. I mean, a lot, you can learn a lot. And yeah, so. Because farts and poop are funny. let's not forget that. I don't know. My 2-year-old, Chris, like, he'll toot. He'll make a little fart.
Yeah.
However you call it. And he thinks it's hilarious. And I'm like, how do they learn that at 2?
I don't know.
Isn't that silly?
No. So it is. They're boys. Boys are just boys.
No, I think girls get it. My boys are definitely boys, but I think girls get kicks out of toots too. We're just not, you know, technically it's not as kosher, I suppose.
I guess. One of the things we've talked about before is the bite force. And we did say the saltwater croc has the strongest bite force of any animal on the planet, period.
Yes.
Now, not next to a dinosaur, right? I think we said dinosaurs were huge and bigger, we thought, but 3,700 pounds per square inch.
Like, that's insane.
Huge. And that's laboratory.
Can you make that relatable for me? What is it? Like, what did that, would that be like me biting through?
For humans, again, our bite force is 100 to 150 PSI. So you're talking 3,700.
Okay.
And, you know, you're trying to, I think alligators are like 2,900 PSI. So you're talking about they can do some damage. They can do a lot of damage. Remember the video? It was right there in Gainesville of the sheriff where the alligator, the sheriff was trying to shoo it back into Paints Prairie and the alligator tore off the bumper of the sheriff's car. It was like YouTube like 5 years
but I'll
ago.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll see if I can post on the show notes, but yeah, it's hilarious because he's like trying to shoo it back, like go back, you know, don't come up to it's that one exit with the rest stop right there on Payne's Prairie. And the alligator just chomps the bumper and just rips it off in like 2 seconds, like just gone. So yeah, incredible. They grab and they don't let go.
Well, and that kind of leads into another one of their behaviors called the death roll. And this is what more salties are known for. I'm not sure about American alligators, but it's a hunting behavior and it's only reserved for large prey. But basically, after drowning its victim or its prey, the crocodile will rapidly roll in the water in order to remove the creature's limbs. Because a crocodile's teeth are designed for gripping and snapping shut with all that force, like Chris mentioned, but they're not really designed for tearing flesh, like a lion, if you will. Mm-hmm. So this death roll behavior is, I guess, supposed to help tear up the body better.
And I've read some of their behaviors too, is they like to, you know, their prey, they like to stuff under logs, underwater, so they kind of rot a little bit, so it's easier to rip off.
So you know, softer, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Stuff like that. So they're, I mean, the Nile crocs, you watch those videos of the mass migrations in East Africa, and you just watch the crocs like grabbing, you know, gazelle and zebras, and oh God, to some of it is just so like Jaws of nature.
Prehistoric, man. But it's worked for millennia, right? For a long, long time. Oh, yeah. So, but a lot of the other behavior of crocodiles, some may think they're boring, but I think they're rather beautiful and interesting to watch. But in general, they spend a lot of time thermoregulating, right? Because they're quote unquote exotherms or cold blooded, and they need external environmental forces like the sun to help control their body temperature. And when they get too hot, they go into the water with only basically their eyes and their nostrils sitting out, and they'll cool off. And when they become too cold, vice versa, they'll go lay out in the sun and sun themselves on some rocks. What I really loved reading about with the saltwater crocodile, the salties, right up my alley, Chris. Mm-hmm. The saltwater crocodile is thought to be one of the most intelligent and sophisticated reptiles of all time. And the more people study it and researchers are learning about it, they are finding that it has really unique forms of communication and with individuals. And so I don't want to go out on a limb and say like language or anything like that, but they definitely have a more sophisticated communications than some of the other reptiles we have talked about. So for instance, the salties are known to bark as a way of communicating with each other. And researchers have identified about four different calls. There's a distress call, and that's normally performed by juveniles. And this distress call is like a little more higher pitched. They also have threat calls that they, and I think you mentioned kind of the hissing and coughing mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. will do at an intruder. We'll get there in a minute when we get to reproduction and offspring, but they actually have a hatchling call, and that's performed only by newborns. And it's a short bark with a high tone. And lastly, they have a courtship bellow, which is a long, low growl, which makes all the ladies come to the yard. So.
No, yeah, they're very intelligent is what I read. They have some of the most complex brain for any reptile. You know, you're talking about their sound perception. You know, one thing I read before we jump into repro and their courtship behaviors is, it's funny, researchers know that you can't capture the same croc twice using the same techniques. They learn really quickly. So different types of traps mm-hmm. and stuff, the croc will learn, nope, that ain't happening. And after one time, that's it.
Chris, yeah. I'm telling you, like, they're 200 million years, yeah. man. They've got a lot of secrets to their success, right? You have to be intelligent, be able to stick around. And well, I think the other thing that was almost mammalian or like mammals learning about was the crocodile courtship behavior. Because we talk a lot about birds and mammals and how some of the fun things they mm-hmm. do. But yes, in crocodiles, they almost have a mating dance. So this is going to be the males, these giant mm-hmm. long males mm-hmm. to attract their smaller in size and stature females. And I always have to giggle to myself. It just keeps me entertained of picturing my husband doing some of these courtship behaviors.
And so, he does do hippo calls and, you know, what other animal calls have we done?
I know. Yeah. I feel He could definitely handle this one. Some of these, like a panda doing almost, like, what was, oh, the panda was a funny one where he, like, goes up backwards, like, in a handstand on a tree to wipe his scent gland. I was like, okay, yeah, John can't do that. That's goofy. He would not do that. But no, this one is up his alley. It's basically a male begins above the water while producing these low frequency infrasounds. John can do that. He's got a nice low voice. Now humans can't hear these, with the crocodiles. But researchers have said that you can like feel the vibrations traveling through the water and you can actually even see pressure waves. So, you know, they're doing that. And then the male may slap the snout on the water and blow water from his nose and perform like little arch positions, like little, I think kind of like arching the back and arch positions. And when it's a little closer to the female, he'll release an oily musk, which floats on the surface of the water to further entice the females. I like a little essential oil, so I can get behind that.
I'm sure it smells wonderful. I'm sure it's just,
But the female, as the male's leading the dance, the female also participates with her own set of auditory, visual, and olfactory signals. So I like that I would have a role in this. And once again, highlighting their intelligence and their communication, during this whole courtship routine, the pair is in constant communication with each other. And once they finally pick each other and agree to meet up again, they'll tenderly rub each other's on the snouts and the backs, and sometimes they even blow bubbles. Isn't that charming? So, yes, and then they'll breed, which may last up to an hour, and they'll twist and turn and do all sorts of typical reptilian things to make sure that the male penis can align with the female cloaca. And this breeding season for salties is going to occur in the months of November through March. And most of the time, the breeding grounds are in fresh water. See, once again, they move from fresh to salt. It's pretty
and
incredible.
And just to jump in and make a note, that is summer and spring for Australia. Remember?
Yeah. Yes, good. Thank you for that.
Because North America people are thinking, oh, it's the winter. They breed in the winter. No. It's opposite down there. So they're basking in the warm sun now while we're freezing here in the States.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. And I think it's important to note, too, that these courtship dances and all this romance, this crocodilian love, actually does not happen until a female is 10 to 12 years old is when she reaches sexual maturity. And Chris, the male, that big male that you keep talking about, he doesn't reach sexual maturity until he's 16.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, when we talk about, longevity and life and life cycle, you can kind of see, I mean, they're not producing offspring for a long time, right? But when the female is impregnated, she will end up laying anywhere 40 to 60 eggs, but she can lay up to 90. And the eggs will be placed in mounded nests made from plant material and mud and then buried. And since it's the wet season, sometimes they're elevated so they don't get, like, the eggs don't flood out. And so the male doesn't really have much of a role once his courtship dance and breeding is done. But the female is interesting, Chris, especially for a reptile. She sticks around. She sticks around and protects her nest and her eggs from predators and humans. And Chris, during this incubation period of 90 days, before the baby crocs are hatched, I think it's important to mention, I know we talked about in sea turtles, but as a reptilian species, the sex determination, so whether these baby crocodiles are going to be males or females, is directly related to the temperature of the nest or the temperature that they're incubating in. So males are typically produced around 31.6 degrees Celsius. And if this temperature is increased or decreased just a little, females will be produced. So typically lower incubation temperatures produce mostly females, where higher temperatures will produce mostly males. It's the general kind of golden rule. So these are things to consider when we're talking about climate change. And I know in sea turtles, they're already seeing effects with that. I didn't dive into the literature enough to find out if they're having issues with that with salties at this point in time, as far as skewed sex ratios, but something to definitely consider, right, as we move forward. And when it's time for the baby hatchlings, the baby crocodiles to be born, the female, the mama croc, will unearth the eggs when she hears that chirping, that communication sound that we talked about earlier, that her offspring make after they hatch. So she can hear them coming out. They make the cry. She knows to help dig them out and help them, assist them if they need any assistance. And then, unlike anything I've ever, I guess I knew about this, but I hadn't really studied it so much. I probably caught a little bit of it on like Wildcrats or some cartoons that make animal cartoons that are amazing. For the record, Wildcrats is awesome. Octonauts is another fun animal one. But what this mama croc does is amazing, Chris. And I'll put some videos up on, I think I sent you one the other night. I was like, Chris, check this out. Yeah, they are amazing. This mama croc assists the offspring into the water by carrying them into her mouth. And depending on the species of croc, she will tend to them for a while, basically until they learn how to swim and know they're safe. So
for a reptile, it's crazy. Different.
For a reptile, I mean, that's very, I mean, we talk about mammals a lot, and of course moms have a big role depending on the species, but I mean, we just did sea turtles, and sea turtles are on their own, right? You know, the mom does. And so it's just, I don't know, when we talk about like intelligence and just care, and I guess if you are scared of crocodiles or you don't like them or whatever, I mean, please go to our show notes and watch this video of this huge, ginormous crocodile mom, this mama crocodile, basically scooping up these teeny tiny, newly hatched crocs, baby crocs, carrying them in her mouth to the water and then making sure they're all okay.
I mean, yeah, it's incredible behavior.
It blew my mind. And I was like, I want to study that. That is just, I mean, but I guess the flip side, or the kind of the reason why she does this or has probably evolved to do this, is that mortality rate for little crocodiles, especially in salties, is really high due to extensive predation. So researchers estimate that only about 1% of newborn salties will survive to adulthood. And then from there, Chris, like we're talking about, you know, what, 10, 15 years till sexual maturity for males and females. So
it's tough.
To get to be 100 years old, it's tough. And that's where it's like the conservation's going pretty well right now, I think, overall. But, you know, it only takes like one disease or some other issues to do a lot of damage. And it takes salties a long time to rebound.
Right. Yeah. It's a huge generation interval. And, you know, going into conservation, you know, we opened up with why care and the 7 critically endangered species and 4 more that are vulnerable. The most,
I don't think we ever said which name.
No,
they
so
were.
The most one,
I don't think we ever said their name.
So the most endangered is the Chinese alligator. And again, this is IUCN, so they kind of group them all together. The Chinese alligator, there's only 86 mature adults on Earth left. So they're in big trouble.
Yeah.
The Philippines crocodile, there's only 129 individuals left. Now, near you, the Cuban crocodile, that one's critically endangered. There's maybe 5,000 left. So, you know, of the 7 critically endangered, those are the numbers you're dealing with. You're dealing with, again, a Chinese alligator on their way to extinction, probably will go extinct unless something major happens. Philippine crocodile on their way to extinction. Cuban crocodile on its way down. So, yeah, I mean, there are species out there. Now, the salties are doing fine. Nile crocodiles are doing okay. But...
Right, because the protections were put into place. And that's where I think with some of these populations that are like 5,000 or, you know, it's like they, hopefully there's protections in place to help those guys rebound. Because I think Australia is a very fine example of if you regulate people in our policy, you can help these animals out big time.
Right, right. So who's out there fighting for crocs besides all of Australia?
Well, Chris, I want to give a shout out to the Australia Zoo first and foremost, and that's in Queensland, Australia. And people are, I'm sure, very familiar with the famous Steve Irwin and the legend.
Love him.
I know. Love him. He was the croc hunter, but he evolved to be much, much more than that. He's an iconic figure for us growing up, and for us learning about species and basically learning to love some of these, you know, less lovable creatures like the crocodile. And so he began his research, his crocodile research in the 1980s. And people just fell in love with him and his humor and his basically his grace and his passion for, you know, all critters, right? Especially crocodiles. So to this day, the Australia Zoo is in partnership with the University of Queensland, and they're basically zoo wildlife warriors, and they manage some of the most successful croc research projects in the world. And they're scientists and conservationists and media and just a whole slew of team of people that work together to conduct research, educate people. They tag and track crocodiles. They monitor behavior, right? And movements and physiology. So I would love to get on that team. Of course, they collect samples from crocs to figure out what foods they're eating. I can obviously get into the digestive physiology of that. And they look at their movement and their ability to return to their home ranges after different issues with the climate. And one of the biggest things they focus on here with the wildlife warriors with the crocodile research is how to manage the coexistence in a healthy way between crocodile and people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Australian Zoo and their wildlife warriors, and of course Steve Irwin, all of his fans, all of Australia. They've done a great job, I think, to help showcase that yes, this is a big prehistoric, powerful animal, but they need us to fight for them just as much, if not more, than probably some of the fluffy and furry critters.
Yeah, yeah, no, awesome.
And of course, you can find any information about the Australia Zoo or the Zoo Wildlife Warriors on Facebook, and we'll put links into our show notes so you can check out them and all the amazing work that they do for crocodiles, for the Salties.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love him. Love him, and I love his wife, Terry. Like, one person I would definitely like to meet in life. You know, the work that they do down there is just amazing. So conservation tips this week is it just focused on water conservation. One of the things thinking about was, you know, there's these things now today throughout the world, low flush toilets. So if you do buy
one.
A new toilet.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
They work really well. Yep. They work really well. And if you don't have one, there's something you can do. You can, you know, some of these plastic water bottles that we get, you know, what you can do is fill it with water or rocks and stick it in the toilet, not the toilet itself, but in the water reservoir. So there's less water being used, and it still works on, you know, flushing your toilet.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, the older toilets, they just had too much water. So you're actually just wasting a lot of it to, you know, the older toilets just use way too much water. So that's one way you can save some water. And this is one thing, you know, if you're debating on a shower or a bath, take a shower. It uses much less water. And there's actually low flow shower heads now that use less water. And just a couple ways you can use as our resources are being depleted, you know, as the population's booming. Now, Angie, you were saying something about outrunning a croc.
Yes.
Do you think you could outrun a croc?
Depends. Did I just
could you outswim
eat
a croc?
Thanksgiving dinner or?
I'd still outrun it. I don't care. I'd be hauling butts.
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes. Most of us could outrun a croc. Crocodiles can achieve about 12 to 14 kilometers per hour for short periods, which is slower than most fit humans can run. So if you're in reasonable shape, you can definitely outrun a croc. So I think that's the goal, right?
Yeah,
that's the New Year's goal is like, if you're not fit, at least get in reasonable enough shape so you can.
What's the thing? At least you'd have to be faster than the person behind you, right? Mm-hmm.
That's what John always says, my husband. He's like, I don't have to be the fastest person. I just have to be faster than the slowest person.
Yes. So they can move somewhat quickly, but not that. And they swim up to 15 to 18 miles per hour or 24 to 29 kilometers per hour. So
faster
in
the water.
It's a little bit fast in the water. Yeah. Now, getting to the statistics on human attacks, first I just want to start with the American alligator. They are, now the statistics, I got this, I think this is from the National Science Foundation in the United States. On average, there's about 10 attacks per year in the state of Florida from alligators.
Okay.
And that seems kind of high. You know, we hear them in the news every now and then, but it happens.
But that's not fatal, right? That's just attacks.
No. Attacks. Less than 6% of alligator attacks are fatal.
Okay.
Less than 6%. Mm-hmm. So they're very rare. It's very, very rare. And again, the season of year is in the warmer season because that's when they're on the move. That's when their breeding season is.
They're more aggressive, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's when you have to watch out. Now, the salties are not the most deadly, but there is about three to four attacks per year in Australia. But of those, only 25% are fatal.
Okay.
So one out of four, mm-hmm. roughly, is fatal in Australia. Malaysia, it's a little bit higher, 50%. And I guess it kind of makes sense because when you have a lot of people that, you know, they're depending on the river.
Sure, like in Africa,
washing
too.
Dishes,
yeah,
clothes.
They're using the water resources more in a more intimate way.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Nile crocs, the worst. It's with humans, 63% of the attacks are fatal. Don't have a lot of good data on it. The one statistic they had is there's greater than 300 attacks per year by the Nile crocodile. And again, 63% of those are fatal. And again, during the warm season when they're on the move and they're more active than that. So overall, the statistics show about 1,000 people per year are killed by crocs. I think more people are still killed by cows. I still get over the statistic that 24 people a year in the United States are killed by cows.
Right.
So I think cows kill more people on earth than crocodiles. So definitely bee stings and other things are more deadly than crocodiles, but they still, you have to respect them. You have to respect where they live and just be
mindful,
careful. Right. And in Africa, hippos are one. We talked about that. Lions are two. Then the Nile crocodile.
Okay.
So lions kill more people in Africa than crocodiles. So it's not, you know, they're not you just have to respect
them. Right. Well, they're doing what they've evolved and been great at doing for 200 million years. So you gotta give mad props, mad respect for that, for sure.
Other than that, another great podcast. We have a ton of stuff coming. Keep sending the requests.
Oh, we love the requests.
And this is for Damien. Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Damien in the UK and, you know, keep it coming and we're going to keep doing this.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.